Now, this leads us kind of to a sister, or a flip side of the same coin, to the first myth, being the second myth. Believing Christ is the only way to heaven is really a very narrow and intolerant point of view. Just yesterday, the president gave a eulogy for seven astronauts who perished in the crash of Space Shuttle Columbia. And some heard, perhaps one might have been able to read his words in that eulogy towards the end, that all of these astronauts, regardless of their relationship to God, went on to a heavenly home. And that message appealed to a lot of people. They were standing up and cheering. Why does this kind of simple universalism appeal?
Yeah, universalism meaning you're going to be saved no matter what. All roads lead to God. It is historically appealing to people. I mean, historically meaning that there's an awful lot of history behind this. This was the pattern of thinking for much of the world's religious experience going all the way back to ancient times, to the Sumerians. Their religion provided the basis for most of the ancient mythology that we learned in school. We may have learned it in the Greek version or the Roman version, but the Assyrians had their version of it, the Babylonians, the Canaanites, the Hittites, and others. Sumerian religion, as it moved east, even provided the background for Hinduism. And in all of this, what one scholar has called the chief operational principle of Sumerian religion was inclusion. You just included all of the so-called gods in one pantheon, and you just kept kind of racking them up. And sometimes you could find rough equivalences. Enlil is roughly equivalent to El, is roughly equivalent to Zeus, is roughly equivalent to Jupiter, just depending upon which group's version of the myth you're listening to. And as this thinking spread, these were all avowedly many paths to the same reality. So I guess the first point I'm making here, Todd, is it appeals to people because this has been what people have heard for a long time in a lot of places in the world. Practically speaking, of course, and in terms of human relations, universalism means you never have to say no to anybody. Whoever you are, whatever you believe, whatever you've been doing, you're going to be saved. That may be an appeal, but I don't think we have to think about it for too long before we realize that there's a hook in this. There's a problem. I mean, do we really intend to say that the Canaanites practicing child sacrifice were merely taking a different path to the same God that Israel worshipped when God said, go into Canaan and wipe out that population as a judgment because of their sin? Are they worshiping the same God that Christians worship? It's pretty obvious they don't.
Now, if the basic practical tenet of this universalism is never say no to anyone with regard to the hereafter, that has a ring of its own kind of intolerance, its own kind of dogmatism.
Yeah, it really is kind of dogmatic in its own way, isn't it? It's just like the person who says, there are no absolutes. There are absolutely no absolutes. That's making an absolute statement. And so here, the person who wants to rule out nothing is in fact ruling out something. They're ruling out biblical faith. Faith that says God is revealed in the person of Jesus Christ, and no man comes to the Father but by him. That is ruled out by such thinking. That scandal of particularity, as it's sometimes called, never shows up better than it does with the person of Jesus Christ, because this is the man who is also God.
Now, you used the term scandal of particularity. Explain that.
In other words, that in the particular details of the life, the career, the miracles, the contacts with people of Jesus Christ, and before he came, in the particular acts that God did to judge and save his people and to give them news via prophecy about the Messiah who was to come, in all those particular things, that's where God is revealing himself. And there's something within the human heart that sinfully revulses at that and says, look, if God were going to reveal himself, he'd reveal himself everywhere and to everybody, not just in one particular place, to one particular group of people, or He wouldn't become human in one particular man. We tend to reject that, but we do so at our peril, because there really lies our comfort. I mean, what do we want? Do we want God to make himself known in a way that we will all recognize? He'll do that at Judgment Day. But if he hadn't come humbly, in the flesh, one man, Jesus of Nazareth, revealing God and taking upon himself the sin of the world, then we wouldn't have any leg to stand on at Judgment Day.